What's up, Andrew? How you doing?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
Good, man. Good. So, we've been following each other on social media for a bit. Probably looking at the same content around AI and data. So, fun to chat about that. I think right before we hit record, we were actually about to go off on the rails on a couple topics. So, if you could hit the record button and get going. But quick. Housekeeping, for people who don't know who you are, do you want to give a quick intro?
Sure. So I work as an investment analyst at a life insurance company based out of Minneapolis. That's what I do day to day. And I golf. And
Fun.
I also I'm a tools guy, so I've built a few things on my own and with some buddies. And basically just looking at like whether it's family stuff or whether it's right the day to day at work, like how can we remove clunk?
Clunk.
Clunk. Like, I don't know, I'll give it there's an example of like trying to take PTO. So you go into the PTO system and eventually you're three windows open and five drop downs deep, and you're still trying to.
Interface. Okay.
Yeah, so and there's a lot of clunk, in my day job, which I think can be fixed. Right, that we rely heavily in the spreadsheet world, and a lot of times something that is. Something that is a spreadsheet that's been used for the last 15 years, it's never gotten any better. And the mode of operation is to email it on to the next person so they could do their part. That's clunk.
Is that bad though? I mean, this becomes part of people's workflow too, and part of their almost their identity with their job. Is it one of those things where one man's clunk is another man's treasure, or is it all just clunk?
I mean, that's a good question. So, in my view, is in my view, and I'm just speaking for me personally, my job is very serial. So, I typically experience the clunk throughout the day. I need the info. I get the info from the vendor or some internal gizmo. Maybe the file server, maybe it's even in an email. And then right now I have to process that data. Might be textual, might be numerical, right? Might be an attachment, PDF, whatever. So then that comes out, and now that has to live somewhere. And then that's got to be analyzed, then process it with, right, hopefully some value add on my part. And off it goes on to the next thing, which is okay. PDF has been taken care of, but now that influences the spreadsheet. And then the spreadsheet influences another spreadsheet. Now and on and on we go. So, right, the idea is if you can automate or shrink, right, the processing window that's mostly manual with a cool tool, your day is infinitely brighter. At least that's how I feel about it. No one wants to take 20 minutes to take PTO.
It's like you need to take PTO to get PTO. Takes
The
too
old,
long.
I need a vacation from my vacation clock.
Because in this case, you're just stuck in like form hell trying to figure it out. Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I was actually writing about this morning in my book. It was basically applying the eight forms of waste in lean to data modeling and why you'd want to do data modeling to help eliminate those eight forms of waste. Clunk definitely seems like a wasteful thing. I think, and to bring it back too, to the first time we met, you showed me actually a tool that you'd built. Basically, this job of probably a junior analyst, at least to some degree, summarizes a lot of information. I thought that was really, really cool, right? So, was that an example of like trying to remove clunk?
Yes, exactly. Right. And I do these things, right? I mean, I build this stuff for fun. And rather, right, if there's commercialization there, may be great, but it's just cool to do. And you know, I have this running list, and maybe you do too, but I have all this, I have like this top five list that moves around, and I'm looking at the things that like the things that I don't want to do during the day. Let's figure out a way to solve for that, right?
Yeah.
The old jobs to be done kind of thought process and really basic point stuff, right? I mean, this, we're not trying, you know, it's you don't just drop a Salesforce on top of a simple problem. We drop, you know, a thing that's got like two buttons that anyone can use. Mm-hmm. And the problem go away. And, you know, kind of what you were saying, right? I mean, I call it parasitic loss, which is as we go forward throughout our day, if it's being chewed up in bits and bites at 3, 4, 5, 20 minutes at a time, eventually that adds up. And, you know, I don't know. For me, that's nobody's treasure.
Why do you think clunk exists, though? I mean, it's an interesting theme. I wasn't expecting to talk about this word clunk. I actually never heard it in this. I guess it's usage before, but I like it a lot. I want to dive more into this. why do you think there's so much clunk in the world? Are people motivated to do this, or is this sort of a byproduct of something else?
I mean, I think it's the heritage of the tools that live in your day to day. Right. I mean, in my workflow, you're the big vendor of data is Bloomberg. And there's another one called FactSet. They're both amazing companies. But they deliver data to the normal user. When I say normal user, someone like me who doesn't want to write fancy Python queries, they just want the stuff. And so the stuff comes typically shipped to you in a Excel file or a PDF, and it hasn't been improved. I hope one day, you know, AI helpers inside apps can be a little agent to write, hey, I want this and I want it in this format, and go out and do it for me. But hey, we're just hitting buttons and we're watching it download into your downloads folder, and you hope to be able to find it later. And right, it's formatted how they format it, not how you need it.
There's that process then.
Yeah, there's that process, yes. There's a lot of data frames that come through these systems where the labels are on the left-hand margin.
Wait, really?
Really. You get really good at writing copy transpose scripts.
I didn't know that. This is a world I don't live in, and now you just scared me away from it. So that's awesome. I wonder, who came up with that in the first place? Like, why would that seems to defy every convention?
I think, right, this is a pure hypothesis, right? Guesswork here. I think what happened is, I'm laughing because it reminds me of one of my developers who did some outside work. I can maybe tell you a funny story. But, right, there was just no pre-thought into UI UX. And right now we're 20 years deep and it is what it is. I mean, and the customer complains a little bit, but not a lot. It's not like, because the labels are in the left-hand margin, I'm going to quit using the product. You use the product in spite of it because it's the, you know, one of the only games in town. So, right. And I don't know how heavy a lift it would be to like fix that. Maybe it's maybe that output is doable, but again, or customizable, but then we're in the clunk stage, right? Now we're clicking on buttons and we're a window deep and we're looking at options, and the options give you more than you need, and ones to change the color, which you don't want to do. You just want it formatted, right? So the funny story is I have a buddy who does UI UX, and he's a really good front end engineer, and he was working pre conflict with some Russian coders, And the issue that he read run into is just like, you know, every time you guys push something new, the button moves. He's like, the, you know, this has to be in the right spot on the screen every time. And the response was, does the button work? So, I mean, here every iteration, right, the outsourced coder is moving the cheese, but they don't care because the button does what it's supposed to do.
It's still cheese.
It is still cheese.
That's really interesting. When did you first start thinking about this? This isn't something I think a lot of people fixate on. I think usually they just accept clunk and sort of move on with their life. Like, this is, it just is what it is.
So I think 20 years of training, or maybe even longer, right? We've had a high tolerance for clunk. Remember the old blue screen of death on Windows 95?
All the time. Happened to me all the damn time.
Right, exactly. So it was just sort of like, well, you know, that's why I turn it off and back on again. It's still, right, the first thing to do. That's just the that's just the acceptance of clunk. And unfortunately, you know, I would describe myself as somewhat impatient when it comes to time wasters.
Same.
So that's kind of how I have my list of five things where I'm like, okay, I don't want to summarize really long documents. I want an AI tool to do it for me. Let's go build that.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to find my stuff. Let's go build that. I don't do any of the building. I have smarter people doing it for me. But right, the problem set is, right, germinates up here based on a blue screen of death somewhere that maybe it's not as catastrophic as that, right? I didn't lose my whole term paper, but I'm sitting here trying to make some progress on my day. And right, it's like watching someone build a slide deck on their phone. It's just painful. So eliminate that.
That's really interesting. So in your own work too, you have a pretty deep fascination with AI right now. How clunky do you think AI is right now?
Oh, but depends.
Okay.
I just ran into a situation today where I don't know what they are even calling it, Bing Chat, or is it Copilot, or whatever shoots
up. Yeah, it's the Office Copilot. Yeah, I can't keep track of all the different names.
Right, exactly. And I was doing some research on XPeng, a Chinese car company, because I wanted to see what they were charging for their different lineups. And, right, the first two cars, the answers were correct. And then in the third car, the S9, I believe they call it, it was wildly inaccurate. Like, you could buy one. The price range was between $44,000 USD and $449,000 USD. And I was right. So the clunk, right, exists today where the user still has to know what good looks like.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, right, you could think, well, I could really trick out this XPeng car just by getting the $400,000 add-ons.
I mean, somebody's happy at the end of the day if you do that. So not you, but.
I was thinking, what does this car even look like? So, I think there's, I'd be interested to see how you're using it in your day to day. I mean, I will, right, I'll hop on the most simple tool, which is the ChatGPT, and I used it to make a nice spaghetti bolognese last night in Instant Pot.
Nice.
So, right, that actually removed clunk, because in the old days, I'd Google that, and then I'd get 18 different recipes with the pictures. Then I got to scroll through. All I want to do is get the recipe and directions. I need to see right. Like I've been on the earth long enough to know what a spaghetti bolognese looks like. I don't need pictures.
And ChatGPT didn't hallucinate and tell you to throw in orange juice or something weird into the ingredients.
No, everything looked legit.
I think it's interesting we talk about Clunk for AI. I think as it stands today, and this is early 2024, so who knows what it'll be like in a few months. But as of today, I think Clunk is sort of bidirectional, right? As you point out, if you're getting a single answer, you better hope that answer is good. Mm-hmm. Or at least sufficient and doesn't lead you astray. You should know that it looks like a good answer. It's sort of the benefit of doing simple Google searches. You know, you get different options and you can sort of evaluate, what seems more plausible than others. Mm-hmm. So I think that's sort of the trade-off as it stands today. And so that's how I view it too. I mean, I use ChatGPT and Bard. I mix both just depending on what I feel like doing. I use them more as conversational agents just to help me think through a problem. Mm-hmm. So I think that it definitely comes up with some interesting angles. So I don't use it for writing. I think that's almost a kamikaze mission, because by the time you have to edit everything and then fact check it, you could have just been done. So, but I think in terms of providing like a good skeleton or outline of ideas, like I totally use it all the time. I think it helps see around corners that maybe you weren't even aware of before. Because I think part of the clunk of thinking is you're so used to your mode of thinking and you only have the context you have the context of. I mean, this damn thing that you're talking about, Bard or ChatGPT, sucked in a lot of information. I can't say it knows anything in the way we know it, but it knows something in the way it knows it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I find it's like having just a friend that you'd sit down and have coffee with, or maybe a beer. And sometimes your friend's a pathological liar, and sometimes your friend, is a saint, and you won't know. just like good friends are. So
I try to keep my pathological liar friends at arm's length, but
it helps.
Yeah,
but it's sort of the problem of like the old logic test of like the Island of Liars. So it's hard to sometimes hard to know, like, you know, if it's telling the truth or not. So I think that's the clunk I see with like ChatGPT now. It's like, even if it gives you an answer, is it correct? You know, like I was doing some stuff the other day and it gave me a bunch of dates, like timestamps and years. And it's like, okay, so now I need to go check this, because I don't know if you gave me the right answer. And part of it was wrong. Sure. Right.
Yes.
So
you could be opening up more trap doors that you actually need.
Mm-hmm.
So like my view is but the more important the job is to do in accuracy is paramount, then don't use that. But if you need a spaghetti bolognese, that's fine.
It's pretty low risk.
What's the worst that could happen? If it's super high important, then the idea is you can still use LLMs to remove clunk, but make sure it's right. It's your data that lives in your vector store.
Mm.
Right. Data that you could trust. So, right. Let's just say you and I, you've got 3-4 people that you just love that have a Substack or a Beehive or whatever. Right. And 9 times out of 10, maybe even 10 out of 10, right. That's going to be what they believe. And you can drop that in a vector database and use a open source or pay for LLM and say, hey, what's on so-and-so's mind the last week?
Mm-hmm.
And it'll give you the answers back and probably a nice hyperlink to the blog.
Yep.
But, right, you've protected yourself because you only let the good stuff in.
Right.
But if you ask the same question of Bard, what's so-and-so writing about? I mean, who knows? Who knows what you're going to get?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember early on, I think it was this time last year, actually, I think Bill Inman, his biography is written by ChatGPT. It was grossly wrong. Just like, damn it, they got everything about this is wrong. So fast forward to today. I don't know. I haven't tried it lately. Maybe it's better, right? But But it is good. I think you're hitting on something that's very interesting. Maybe we talk about that too, like sort of localize maybe small language models.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is this something that you've been experimenting with?
Not yet, but right. I mean, my thought is that today, right, the easiest lift to get going is to use, right, an off-the-shelf pay-for model.
Yeah.
Normal, right? If you're super technical and talented, well, you know, have at it. But I believe, like, over, there's a guess, right? No one knows the answer. But my thought is that, you know, specialized models will eventually be general purpose for a particular domain.
Mm.
Or at least they'll be cheaper and good enough.
Good enough. What does good enough mean to you?
That all depends, right? Now we're back to the spaghetti bolognese mm-hmm. question.
Well, let me take an example. So for financial research,
sure.
Like how good does a model need to be for you to make a decision?
So one of the right, it has to have extremely good recall to help move me through the workday. So I would posit that in many cases, let's just take a person in strategy or consulting.
Hmm.
They big piece drops, right? And it's so-and-so, right? They're thought leader. They drop a 40-page text on, you know, what's new or what's happening in a certain industry. Well, right, there's some MBA level strategy person that's working at Boeing or wherever, and they got to read that. And mm-hmm. then they got to summarize it. And then they got to ship that off to their manager or team. And then it's got to be saved somewhere so that they have it for ad infinitum so they can go back to it. And the way that workflow is today is print out the PDF and highlight it, and then go to the keyboard and start typing up a Word document or add one more page to your OneNote instance. And then, right, so that's very, very manual stuff.
Yeah.
My thought is you could slurp out the good stuff from 40 pages and say, hey, you know what, right? And LLM will be able to allow me to put together a nice, tight, succinct package for management. And then right, we can have the full transcript in the back. That's fine.
Right.
Most people want the 2-minute drill. And I think we're good enough as long as, right, you trust the PDF that you're working with or whatever else. You would never go out to the open internet and ChatGPT and say, summarize this report by XYZ company that just dropped, because a lot of times it won't be able to find it, or it'll get last year's one and think it's this year's one.
I'm sure people do this too.
Apparently a pretty, yeah, if based on what I hear around the coffee pot, it's reached national level attention.
Oh, interesting. And tell me more about that.
Well, I mean, you see people of essentially high import who've just gone out and, right, used LLM connected to the World Wide Web to write things for them. And turns out it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of finger pointing and hand wringing, and the response is, he shrugged.
I'm curious to see. I noticed that ChatGPT is doing this now, where it actually go and find it'll comb the web for links, mm-hmm. so it'll return Bing results. It's the only time I use Bing, by the way, is when I use ChatGPT. Didn't realize it was still there, but now it is, I guess. Side note, I guess it still does like, what, $10, $20 billion in ad revenue a year, Bing does. It's kind of crazy.
It is. I did not know that.
Yeah, maybe ChatGPT told me that. I don't know. It is getting better, though, in terms mm-hmm. of searching the web, right? And Bard's been able to do this for a bit, actually. So it's getting better. And I see some comments on LinkedIn, too, where people, I think, are poo-pooing large language models. I may have been one of these people at some point, depending on my mood. Sometimes I still am. The accuracy and whatnot, but it is getting better. Or at least more believable. Mm-hmm. I think just given the amount of attention on these models and the accuracy, or I would say the notorious hallucinations, like this has to be solved. And I don't think anyone's blind to this fact. So it's a huge thing. I think by just the amount of money and attention on it, it's going to get solved.
Yes. It seems to be top of mind. And right when I'm goofing around on the social media channels, my basic comment is use it on data you already trust.
Yeah.
Right. Anyone can build a corpus of data. I think even like, I don't use Notion, but I've been told that Notion has the ability to write in a limited form, sort of chat with the data that lives in your Notion instance. And my sense is that more and more vendors, right, will try to do that too, right? There's been a lot of hand-wavy stuff about, right, Copilot is going to allow you to write surface ideas and things with your documents that live throughout the SharePoint ecosystem within your company. And while that sounds amazing, I mean, I think it's a pretty heavy lift because no context Teams chats are really hard to gain, wisdom and insight from.
Well, half of them are just GIFs anyway. So,
yeah. The new GIFs that they dropped were, spot on. They're really. Every time my GIF library grows in Teams, it's a good day for me.
Yeah, it is. That's really interesting. I've been playing around with Google has this new beta thing. They always have a new beta thing, and you never know how long it's going to be around. But for now, I've been enjoying using Notebook LM. Mm-hmm. It's their. You should check this out. So you can sign up for it. But it's a way of. They claim it's a new way of writing, right? I'm writing a book now. I'm like, I'll try new ways of writing, especially since it pertains to the subject matter I'm writing about. And so the whole point is you can give it documents. It'll synthesize mm-hmm. those documents. And then you can converse the material. Sort of like what you showed me in a way. Right? When you showed me the demo of a text consolidator. But this is definitely an interesting one because you can throw like maybe PDFs from archive, mm-hmm. various other sources. And I had some research papers that I'd read. And I wanted to make mm-hmm. sure I read them before I throw anything in. And it did a really good job, actually. Right? I was like, give me the top 5 points, between all of these PDFs, actually. If mm-hmm. you were to synthesize all the information in here, what would this look like? And it did a fantastic job, actually. I was shocked. That would have taken, a researcher probably a full day at least. Mm-hmm. They're 40-page PDFs, and this is a lot of math involved. There's not a lot of light reading here, by the way. It's like that's something you're just going to comb through. Mm-hmm. Right? They're really good. Really good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think, that's the hope for me, because I think that, right, you just declunk yourself quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
a lot.
It could have been a day, and it wasn't. So, but I think the ability to just slurp out wisdom from good texts, whatever they are, can be helpful. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's multiple texts, so. Right. I'm just sort of spitballing here with you as I think this through, but let's just say you have your favorite authors and they, and it's philosophy will be our context. So you have your favorite philosophers from, you know, present day and turn of the century, and then write the pre, you know, the Renaissance era or whatever. And right, you, if it's available and you load it in, we ought to be able to ask questions about, right, our, you know, a philosophical dilemma we may have, and get a myriad of answers based on how those different authors that wrote those texts way back when respond to the question. You know, and, you know, in theory, well, actually in theory and in practice, I mean, right, those chunks in the vector space all kind of live next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Your prompt is going to be like, okay, this is a very vexing question for me. I have to figure out, right, the best way to bring this bad news to a certain person or whatever. Mm. How do I go about doing this? All right. I've never had to deliver a message like this before. Right. These kind of things could be helpful. I mean, you got to really geek out about it, but
yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I thought, and I'm sure someone's doing this, is that, you know, there's a lot of my specialty at work is industrial companies, and there's a lot of these companies that provide a widget, but then the widget breaks, and so they have to send a truck to fix the widget.
Mm.
Think of an elevator.
Yep.
Okay. So if you're at the Four Seasons in Miami Beach and there's a 6 bank of elevators and one goes down and you're on the 16th floor, you're pretty miserable because now your wait for the elevator is longer, right? In this, they designed this property for 6 elevators for a reason. Because there's some sort of room to elevator ratio that's just magic.
Mm-hmm.
So when one goes down, management wants this elevator working ASAP. And, you know, so what happens is the elevator manufacturer sends someone in a truck, a technician, to go check it over. And if it's a simple fix, they fix it. And if it's a hard fix, they're on the phone with engineering talking about, well, this is what's going on. I see this light flashing and I'm getting this error code and looks like this fuse is tripped. What do we do? And in today's world, you know, you're going to see someone flipping through a PDF of an engineering schematic for that particular elevator. And then if it's tough, right, they're on the phone with their engineering team, and they're both doing control F search for a certain error code to find out what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can load up all of your, all of your service manuals and how things work, right? I mean, an elevator is not a complex adaptive system. It's not going to change. When the green light flashes and the error code is X, Y, and Z, you know what to do. But that might not be top of mind when the technician gets there because it's quote unquote a tricky fix. So I mean, I see huge potential in being able to bottle up these authoritative texts and make, right, in some sort of a hybrid keyword semantic search kind of way, get the answers faster so that you could get back to your 16th floor hotel room.
Right. Yeah, it would save a ton of time. I know she has books on your shelf. The thing I've been thinking about is what happens when maybe old books that aren't, deemed appropriate for this day and age, right? I'm sure you can think of some books. Mark Twain wrote a few, and so forth, right? But what happens with that? Where if you try and type in, maybe try to type in something verbatim about this book, mm-hmm. you know, like Huckleberry Finn or something like that. You kind of guess what you might want to type, but some of these models too, they censor. So would you be getting back the right answer? Or would you get back a redacted version, or maybe no answer at all? Right. And I guess what I've been thinking about is what's the implications of this with literature and I guess content that's maybe deemed socially inappropriate. Right. Does that mean that content disappears or gets obfuscated? And if we're only relying on one way of querying this data, then what happens? Right. And so that's part of the thing I've been thinking about is what's the implications of all this. So
that's a good question. I don't know if I know the answer. I would imagine right. We know enough about the internet. Someone will build a dark web version.
Mm. I thought that was Grok that Twitter did. Just kidding.
I'm not there yet, but I get the ads down when I log in or when I pull up the app.
So do I. I can't force myself to pay for Twitter though, or X, whatever it is. I don't know. Nah. But it is interesting though. You know, mm-hmm. I guess the training everything on the dark web and all that kind of stuff. I'm thinking, what's just the implications of what does truth mean at the end of the day? Right, when you're getting back a single answer, especially at least with Google search, you get back multiple links, and some of those are obviously redacted, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're not going to have, harmful content on there, right? Mm-hmm. Like stuff involving minors or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. It's just the implication of this is something I've been thinking about quite a bit lately. Like, what does this mean for discoverability?
Well, you dropped a 5-minute rant. You know, I think it was probably late last week. Which I found very interesting because I think you're spot on, and I don't know if the title was the Internet of Shit or something.
The Internet of Bullshit is what it was. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. So that was right. I mean, that was 5 minutes well spent.
Oh, thank you. I was in kind of a cranky mood that day, so thanks. The audience, though, right? The context of this was my friend Sol. Rashidi, she's well known in the data space and the AI space. She pings me early in the morning. She's like, Joe, this is really weird. There's an article about me that more about my husband, actually. And I can't make any heads or tails out of this. And coincidentally enough, I knew the company that published that article. They're friends of mine.
Wow.
So this is where it gets really weird. So I go into their blog page. And I noticed that the page count, you know how you have a page counter? Mm-hmm. It went from like 500 to almost 1,000 in about 10 seconds. And it was 6 blogs per page. So you can figure out that was a lot of content. Mm-hmm. What, 3,000 articles like that was generated in about 10 seconds? And I'm just like, and you look at these articles and they're just the weirdest things I've ever seen. It was like, this is a BI company, right? And some of the articles are about how to keep your inventory low for your warehouse. And like, this is who's this for?
Right.
Right. And then Sol, it's hard to go through all these articles. There's no search on it, but then Sol's articles are as well. And I looked at it and I was like, well, it's, and her husband is like, this is wrong. I wish this were true. It's very flattering, but so it's just an example, you know. And then I made that podcast, just the Internet of Bullshit, where I was just going off about how, you know, it content creation is super easy. And this is a plus. It could also be a minus, in a lot of ways, depending on what you're trying to do. So,
but there's an argument that, right, you should, as phony content gets pushed to the web, you should maybe even stop, right, training your models on the new stuff, because if it's being more corrupted,
yeah,
as time goes by, your model's going to actually potentially get worse.
A lot worse. A lot worse.
Right. It's kind of like a before Christ, after Christ kind of moment here, where at one point in time, the internet, when creating content actually took some work, to when the marginal cost of creating content was pretty much zero.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As we crossed that line, the internet became full of more clunk.
A lot of clunk. Right. And it's one of those things where, because we're gaming the algorithm, right? So you had a bunch of SEO farms out there just pumping out all kinds of crap. And I mean, that is a lot of the internet now. It's like bad emails and, you know, just really crappy articles everywhere. You know, but what does this do for discoverability? You know, because it's one of those, you know, hopefully this is being worked on, but how do you prioritize which content gets pushed to the top in an LLM? Right now, as far as I know, that doesn't actually happen. You know, it just probabilistically figures out what words are next, but there's no weighting on terms of hierarchy. Maybe somebody's working on that. I don't know. But it's one of the first things I wrote back in it was December of last year was, I just posted on LinkedIn, that, like, if you thought that SEO was bad, just wait. Because, you know, at least the nice thing with SEO was, yeah, I could look through a bunch of articles and figure out which ones I wanted to read. Now, it's a much different story. You know, you get one answer and, you know, hopefully that's the right one. But if somebody's been gaming it, right? I mean, I used to do this back in the late 90s when I was doing websites. I would do all kinds of black hat SEO stuff. Like, you know, back in the day, you could just have page color and just hide the text with the color and it would be there and it would get indexed. You can't do that anymore, but just pretty cheesy stuff like that. But I feel like this is basically where we are today with large language models is pretty much where we were in the late 90s with the web. So mm-hmm. it's the Wild West.
Very, very, very much so. Earlier we were talking today about, right, where people are along on their journey. So, like, right, you and I can geek out in the broader, you know, the data AI community writ large can be talking about all this interesting stuff. But, right, the decision makers who have purse string control are kind of very early on mm-hmm. in understanding, right? I mean, they have businesses to run. They can't make, they can't pick up an AI hobby over the weekend out of thin air because their lives are already full. So, right, the level of understanding is a little bit right. That needs to mature a little bit. We're not in full bloom right now. Remember, I mean, the go do AI kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I think there's some cognitive dissonance too, right? When I talk to people of all walks of life, and I think your friend Saul talks about it as well, is right. As soon as you have to get the labyrinthine group of sheriffs and speed bumps into the same room, you end up with a slide deck.
Yeah.
But nothing that you can send to the front line. So right, to help them remove clunk. And don't get me wrong, right? I mean, the interesting thing is the developers or the IT organization or whatever organization that lives inside or whatever group that lives inside a big org, right? The refrain is, well, isn't Copilot going to do that? Right? What we've already given you, doesn't that work? So, right, there's this kind of, but usually the answer is no.
Right.
Right. Usually the answer is no. And it's somewhat, to me, it's kind of like defeating a little bit. And the reason I say that is we have this new thing that can maybe like revolutionize the business process. Right. Let's take 1 hour and cut it down to 5 minutes. That's awesome. That's a big win. And then, right, and then the sheriff of the organization gets involved and says no. And unfortunately, right, that dissonance, basically, when someone hears that answer, they're being told, I don't love you that much. Because, if there was love, encouragement, and support, we would be like, yeah, let's kind of kick this off. Let's put a little something behind it and see what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a story from Warren Buffett or something like that about candies, and the husband that drives home from work on Valentine's Day and buys the $8 box of chocolates is sending a message. You should buy the $20 box of chocolates, but when you buy the $8 box of chocolates, it says you're an afterthought, and this was a perfunctory buy. And so when someone from IT says just try to shoehorn teams to do that, well, I got the $8 box of chocolates.
You didn't get See's candy.
No, I did not.
It's good candy, by the way. I just finished an entire box of it the other day.
Oh, really? I've never had the pleasure, actually.
You never had C's? No. Oh, man. Okay. Well.
Okay. Hop Andrew, over. Yep.
Maybe I'll make a note and send you one.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
See, right now, the $20 box of candy from Joe.
Okay, got that in the notes there. For the audience, I'm not going to just send anybody chocolates, so it's a thank you gift for being on the show. It's good candy, though, by the way. I don't know if you can get it in your area, but if you can, you'll become addicted, and then you'll be buying $3 box of chocolates and be like 500 pounds. So
it gets worse from here.
Yeah, I had that, and like, what was it? They had this giant box of peanut brittle. For some reason, I'm like an 80-year-old man who eats peanut brittle, but it's good. It's so good. But yeah, that happens. So okay. Yeah, anyway, yeah, dope. Yeah, it's an interesting one too. I feel like back to the $8 box of chocolates, aka cheaping out on the tool set you're gonna give your team. How, if you're an executive, how do you think about AI? There's a lot of noise, a lot of, I would say, good and mostly really terrible advice on AI right now. How do you view this? How do you view getting started or winning with it?
I mean, everyone is on a different, right, a different part of the Monopoly board. Some people are just at go, and some people are just rounding the jail, and some people are at the railroads, but I don't think they're that much further along than where the railroads are on the Monopoly board. I think it's got to be. You can tell me what your thoughts are, but I think it's a boon for high ticket consultants.
Oh yeah,
right. Someone's gonna right. That's the easy way. So if I'm a Fortune 500 executive that works in manufacturing or retail or something like that, the first thing we do is we deputize someone from the team and we say, well, you're the AI gal now.
Right.
Learn all you can.
Right. Have fun.
build the report. But don't, by the way, keep doing your day, your main job, but this just add this on. And then after your report's done, then let's call in some consultant, whether it's a specialized consultant or one of the big four or whatever, nothing that, right. They have a pitch already, I think, right. They just opened the drawer and manufacturing company, AI, here you go. Right. It's just made the order, but the graphics are great.
Yeah. Never seen this before. Just kidding. It happens every day, man.
And then, right, then the next step is once you go through that, well, we need to, there's a digital strategy and we need to, then we get to go back in and get your data right, if you will, you know, get your data right writ large and build the better plumbing and so on and so forth. And there's nothing that some more consulting hours can't fix. So
solves everything.
Yippee-ki-yay. Now, I mean, there's a budget friendly version, which is, you know, look at some people on LinkedIn like Saul and or you or right anyone that's been on your podcast can add value to an exec in an hour. Easy. It dispense with all of this machinations, right? Well, we have to build our own this, or, you know, we have to train it on all our data. I hear that, right? And it's interesting because there's a disconnect between people think they need to build their own LLM.
Yeah.
And they really don't. The LLMs have been built. You just go out and grab one. And if you're technically proficient, right, you can even use an open sourced one, right? ChatGPT is easy because it's an easy API left, but right, if you want to get to wow in a week, you can do that. But there's the MBA who management pulls aside and says, you're our new AI person, they go out and think, well, we have to come up with, a million terabytes of data before we can get started.
Right.
Then they come back with that and it's a non-issue where nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. And good luck finding the hardware if you wanted to find it. So it's going to be a while.
Also a good point.
Yeah.
So build on what others have done at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, LinkedIn is teeming with people that can help with a 1 hour phone call.
Oh, there's a ton. Yep. I say a cheat sheet. Just look at my podcast list. There's probably somebody on there that can help you, or at least give you not terrible advice. So, or less terrible advice, I would say. It's an interesting one too. I feel like there's a lot of there's definitely people doing large language models that I know, like for real and in production. And I think in a lot of cases, it feels like even with these people, there's just a sense where you're trying to keep up. Because everything's changing on a weekly, even a daily basis. You know, I mean, I was sitting down to read the new paper on Mamba, right? Which might be a new, a new method. So it just takes advantage of hardware a lot more efficiently and stuff. But it's just things change super quick, you know. And so who knows? I think the only consternation I ever hear from practitioners is that it's just. Like staying on top of this stuff it's a full-time job. And even then you don't feel like you're getting anywhere. Cause what if you missed that one paper that came out that you somehow skipped, right? Then the other thing, interesting thing too, is if you go to like, I was in San Francisco, was it last month? Before they're giving a talk in Silicon Valley, at the MLabs meetup. And what was interesting there is I think there were like several dozen meetups at night. In San Francisco and in Silicon Valley, just all throughout the area. Like you could, there's hundreds of meetups happening right now on AI. So just to keep up, I don't know how you would do it. You couldn't even conceivably go to any of the, like all these events in a week. Like it physically would be impossible. So, right. We live in smaller geographical areas where you don't have that problem.
That's true. I think where I live, I don't think the first AI event has even been hosted yet.
Sorry, it's pretty cute for the audiences. Daughter just walked in. Hi, how you doing?
Can you say hi? Can you say hi to Joe? She's cold because we live in Wisconsin and I don't think she had her jacket on. So.
Oh.
And you seem sad, May. Are you sad? Okay. I'm going to keep talking to the gentleman on the screen, okay? And I'll be right down.
But I can't find Mom.
No, okay. I think she's outside.
That's cute.
Yeah, home from school, 3:57.
Oh, okay. Nice. Wait, my kids go back to school tomorrow. I don't know why Thursday, but yep. It's the joy of kids. They got activities too. So
exactly.
I think my favorite talk I gave this year or last year was actually my son's sixth grade class. We talked about AI for an hour. And I think out of all the talks I gave, and I don't even know how many talks I gave last year, but that was, I think, the most memorable.
That's super cool. So yeah. Where are the sixth graders on the Monopoly board? If they
they're not a Mediterranean Boulevard. they move past that. But it's, you know, so I open up the conversation with just what do you think about AI? You know, open-ended question. And a lot of the responses, you know, about the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes of our 1 hour discussion was, you know, they felt like it was going to take over the world. You know, I think there's a lot of concern mm-hmm. with what AI could do. You know, so I pull out my phone, mm-hmm. I show them ChatGPT, and I'm just like, you know, I got the ChatGPT app. Let's play with this. Let's test the boundaries of this thing. And so I think within an hour, they really understood. Okay, so I think it's going to be good for these types of things, right? You know, and maybe not so much for these others. And I think it was good. It helped demystify, you know, a lot of the you know, kind of a mystique and maybe paranoia around AI. Because I think, the media doesn't do a good job at this. I think they blow it out of proportion in a lot of cases, like especially a lot of AI doom and gloom. I mean, maybe it will turn into Terminator. I don't know if it does. And I guess it's beyond our control anyway. So you'll deal with that. But, the cool things too is just talking about careers with kids, you know, and kind of mm-hmm. like where, you know, maybe how I would think about if I were in their shoes, you know, which is kind of weird counterfactual thing. But, how would I think about a career choice, you know, if I were in sixth grade? And the things I, you know, told him was, why don't you just focus on things that AI probably won't be as good at, right? So this kind of flips the whole funnel on career options. You're told you should go get a white collar job and, you know, make all the money. And I'm like, a lot of those jobs, I think they're going to change. You know, I would focus on maybe things that AI's probably going to be less great at, like even the skilled trades. I'm telling my kids that's I think an admirable profession to be in and makes a lot of money. Makes a lot of money, especially if you can run a business of it. So, you know, the other thing I told him too was just, you know, advise him to just be a good person, you know, bring the best version of yourself to each day. Like that's at the end of the day, that's all you can really control is how you bring yourself. Right. So mm-hmm. It was good. It was a good discussion though. I'll always remember that.
Yeah. The be a good person, that reminds me, I think it was Charlie Munger, quote, and I'm paraphrasing, but like, deserve the life you want.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. I think you said that right. That's one of the cornerstones to actually getting the life that you want is to actually deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's right. That guy had a lot of good quotes. So
he was a quote machine. There'll be a you know, a Charlie bot someday where it'll just fit.
It's going to be really terse. Trust me. I mean, I've been, I don't even know how many shareholder meetings of that dude. He just, he's the king of the one-liner.
Yep. Or 4 out of 5 answers will be no comment.
Yeah. I have nothing else to say. I think Warren Buffett used to call him the abominable no man. Cause he would just say no to everything. And he say half the time he was never there, so you could just like predict his answers. So it's just, man, they don't make him like that anymore. I miss that guy.
But I do too. That was a sad day.
It really was. I cried a bit, but it was hard. So awesome. Well, on that cheery note, I think we're coming up on time, but it's a great chat. Yeah. I like where your head's at, man. It's refreshing. So
yeah, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun. And you know, I think it's wild, right? I mean, there's so much good, especially podcast content too. I can't keep up with it anymore.
It's so hard. Okay, final question: how many podcasts do you have on your iPhone or your phone?
So I've got you. I've got all of the Join Colossus family of podcasts.
Mm.
So Invest Like the Best.
That's a good one.
Yes, and all the others that fit under right that brand. And then I do a little bit I think it's canceled now, but I used to do Panic with Friends. I think Howard just sort of wrapped it up and is doing other things. And then there's a couple others that are investment specific, like not another value blog, or I forget exactly what it's called. Summaries of podcasts would be nice too.
It would. I can't remember the company, but I think they raised some money recently. I was reading about it. I wish I knew the name. It's supposed to be like the Netflix of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Is that interesting?
Spotify?
No. You think that would be them, but they blow their money on Joe Rogan.
Okay.
And some other company. Yeah, but summaries of podcasts would be awesome. I think that's bound to happen. Just searchability too is another big one, right? Because it's like, how do you? It's a high friction problem listening to podcasts. Like, is it going to be good? I don't know. Do I have to wait to get to the good part? Cool. That's a lot of time I won't get back. Right. So.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's why I just listen anymore to like stand up comedy, or at least like comedians. So like We Might Be Drunk is like one of my favorite podcasts, with Mark Norman and Sam Worrell. So just hilarious. And
I'll have to check that out.
It's funny. It's funny. Yeah, watch the YouTube actually. The YouTube's even funnier, but it's okay. Just, it's what happens when you get comedians getting drunk, inviting their friends over. It's these guys are insane.
It's got to be insane.
Yeah, I try not to listen. I like tech podcasts. I try not to listen to too many of them though, because I feel like I'm just in this stuff all day. Like I need something like a circuit breaker.
Sure. Just
guys making fart jokes and stuff is way more interesting than hearing about AI models. Well,
so. My 9-year-old kid will be into that too then.
Don't let him listen to We Might Be Drunk, though. That's a different one. Just okay. In fact, though, you know, there is a whole genre of audio on Spotify dedicated to fart jokes or fart noises, actually. So those are fun. So you can just give that to your kid, and she'll just annoy you to no end.
I'm sure that's already bookmarked, Joe.
Yeah, sure it is. Well, it's really fun when they put that on your Alexa all of a sudden. You're just like... This is it's really loud. So anyway, awesome. Fart jokes. Good way to end a podcast.
Cool. No, better than where we were.
Better than where we were. I agree with that. For people who want to learn more about you, how can they do that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm pretty friendly. I don't chat during the day because it usually heads down at work. But
yep.
After the kids go to bed and nighttime comes around, I'm usually hopping around making snarky comments and sometimes adding value.
You got good comments.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one reason I was like, hey, it'd be fun to be on a podcast. Yeah. He's smart like a whip. So awesome. Awesome. Well, Andrew, it's good chatting. I'll send you your box of C's soon. So
thanks, Joe.
We'll
catch up later. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, buddy. See you.